At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Granley.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And we're going to have lots of Super Bowl stuff next week. We talked about the Super Bowl last week. We're going to talk about it next week. We're going to have the big preview show. We're going to have the prop bets stuff and all that. So what we had this week so far is just an avalanche of non-Super Bowl news. So we need to get to all this stuff. Or, I don't know, the football gods are going to be mad at us in some way, shape, or form. Lots of coaching stuff, lots of player rumors, some guy retired.
I know, a lot of stuff. Boy, I mean, the NFL scriptwriters, as Arian Foster might say, were busy this week, you know?
Yeah, shame on Arian Foster for not realizing that nobody understands anyone's jokes on social media anymore. And now, now look where you are.
Wait. So that was a complete and total bit.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be.
I mean, so I watched it very quickly and I was in a mode of just not really having a ton of faith in society at that moment. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, wow, this is what we're doing. So I didn't listen to enough of the clip. And for those listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, Arian Foster has a podcast and went on this apparently sarcastic diatribe that the NFL is scripted and that basically practice, quote unquote, is just them practicing all the things that the NFL tells them to do. So, yes.
Yeah.
But it was okay. So I missed the part where, like, I didn't know if he had, like, gone fully, you know, like, if he had gone to the other end of the matrix, like, I wasn't sure. So I put that out of my brain space because it's a busy week. And I was like, well, yeah. I feel very sorry for Arian Foster if this is how he actually feels. But if it was a long con into sort of like an Andy Kaufman type of bit, that's brilliant. Good for him.
It was a super dry delivery.
Okay.
I don't know him personally, but I assumed it was. But yeah.
Okay. Good for him. plus, like, if you would imagine, right, just like the WWE, right, that is rigged, that is fixed, it's scripted, there are so many opportunities to break out of that. And some of the most famous WWE wrestlers, right, got to where they were because they complicated the script writing process by breaking character and doing something else that they weren't supposed to do, right? So, I don't know. Long story short, guys, welcome to the podcast. The NFL's not rigged. That's Gary Gramling and I'm Connor Orr. Let's do this.
Let's start with all the coaching news here. We've got head coaches. We've got coordinators. We have the Broncos settling for their third choice. What a fine organization. Other than last, someone pointed out they've had so many head coaches since the Super Bowl. It's been just an absurdly run operation there for a franchise that, you know, is one of the blue bloods in the NFL. But Sean Payton's a really good head coach. Well, let's be clear on this. There's, you know, this is not subbing for, I don't know, someone's I don't want to bust on some coach. You're not plucking someone out of the Sun Belt to come coach your team. Sun Belt has fine coaches as well.
That's right.
But I think it's pretty logical. You have very little draft capital. You had to give up another huge chunk. I mean, I know there's a lot of folks out there being like, well, you know, they were going to sign Bradley Chubb anyway, so it's almost like they're not giving up a first round. It's like, yeah, they are giving up a first round pick.
No, they definitely are. Yeah,
they could have spent that first round pick, and they're giving up a 2024 second rounder here. So, they gave up a lot to get Sean Payton. There were some conflicting insider reports. I think while we can't 100% confirm one or the other, I think based on the timing and also the recent track record of the person who is trying to shoot down these reports, I think it's quite clear that, yes, the Broncos were interested in Jim Harbaugh, were interested in D'Amico Ryans, who they would have gotten without having to give up draft compensation. And also what Sean Payton said at the press conference did, you know, it sounded like, you know, the way he phrased it was that the Broncos had done a really nice job of letting him know where he stood throughout the process, which to me very much matches up with, hey, we don't want to trade draft picks for you. We like you as a coach. So we're going to try and hire one of these other guys. And if we don't get him, we'll circle back because you're also a very good coach and we like you, et cetera. But that's where we land. No Jim Harbaugh. No D'Amico Ryans in Denver. Instead, it is Sean Payton, who, again, is a very good football coach.
He is a good football coach. I wonder if this is what he wanted out of all this, right? Because if you go back, he hits his free agent tour, whatever it is, and lords over the entire process and expects everybody to basically show up at his doorstep like you're a well-wisher at the godfather's daughter's funeral, right? And, you know, the godfather's daughter's wedding.
Yes.
She didn't die, Gary. She got married.
She did.
Man. Yes.
Yep.
Little bit of a macabre start here to the MMQB podcast. I don't know if the godfather grants favors if his daughter dies, too.
I don't know.
I hope not. I hope he's just being there for his family. Jeepers.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think he expected that treatment. Mm-hmm. I think he got himself to that moment. And then, you know, so I had been writing all along, I did not think he was going to get a job. And the reason that I wrote that is because I talked to a ton of people in the coaching industry. And the overwhelming idea that I got back from all of these guys was, boy, that's a lot to give up for a head coach, right? Because it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 to 20 million. You have to pay him commensurate with the best head coaches in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You got to give him Belichick money. You got to give him Belichick power. So you got to tell your GM he's about to get steamrolled and you're paying for the GM salary. And then you got to give up draft capital. Now, I'm seeing a lot of people make excuses for the Saints. For not getting the John Gruden return, which was 2 firsts, 2 seconds, and $8 million. Sean Payton's a better coach than John Gruden, and you should have been able to get something closer to that. Now, I've heard people defending the Saints say, well, you know, they were going to lose him anyway, so this is something other than nothing. I don't know. I'm kind of wishy-washy on that because you had him under contract for a couple more years, but
yeah.
Whatever. You need the draft capital now. I get it. And so you're gonna get what you get for it. But all along, the belief was like, God, that's a lot to give up for a head coach. And so I don't know where that started to turn, because I think Sean, this is what I think. I'm not saying that he thinks this, but I think what he wanted was sort of the ready-made retirement job, right? Where you walk in and the quarterback's already set up, you know, Justin Herbert, maybe, just naming a guy off the top of my head. And, you know, the offense, you know, like there's skill position talent there. There's a good team that you can kind of just is underperforming. You can flip them and make the playoffs. But that didn't happen. Dallas is sticking by Mike McCarthy. Brandon Staley played himself into another year with the Chargers and changed offensive coordinators in the process. And so what you were left with was basically a decision by Payton, right? Do I want to go back in the booth? Do I want to risk being forgotten about? Do I want to take 2 years off? And so ultimately, you jump at an opportunity that I feel is pretty damn close to the Saints to begin with, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have a long-term solution at quarterback. You have issues with draft capital. You have, and maybe your draft capital issues are the equivalent of the Saints' cap issues, right? Where it's going to complicate things in the near term. And if you get if you're Payton and you got assurances that you could move on from Russell Wilson, if you move on from Russell Wilson, then your cap is just as screwed up as the Saints one was when you left. And so it's not like this is not a smooth landing, you know. I likened it to you're taking over a game of SimCity from a crazy person, like that was playing it at the library and just got up and left, and you're sitting down and you're like, oh God, like he
is that something you did?
SimCity
at the library, at like the public library,
at our middle school. I think our middle school had a knockoff version of Roller Coaster Tycoon on the we got those. Oh God, do you remember those neon colored Macs?
Yeah, that's when I was in college, Connor.
Yeah, that felt like, I mean, I don't know if I've ever been prouder of being able to say I went to school somewhere than when Abington Heights Middle School got like 36 neon Macs, and
yeah.
I told everybody about that. I told my grandparents, like I was like, this is a big freaking deal, guys.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be able to be on the internet in 11 minutes. but we had a knockoff version of Roller Coaster Tycoon that was like free that you could download off the internet. And instead of like, and like gerbils would ride the roller coasters. You could build the roller coasters and build the roller coaster park, but there'd be gerbils on them. I don't know why. But so a lot of times, you know, a kid would get kicked off after his 45-minute computer time and you jump on and you don't have time to reboot and start over. And so you're trying to just... you're trying to work with what you got. And maybe that kid, you know, I don't know, maybe you put the roller coaster over the where the ticket gate's supposed to be, and there's going to be some legal concerns there. You know, there's a lot of
flies,
there's
into
a lot of red
an active
tape.
Volcano.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, this is a long-winded analogy by way of saying that I think that Sean Payton's got some work ahead of him. Probably just could have said that.
The other thing with Payton, and yeah, I mean, you said, look, he wanted the Chargers job. You want the Chargers job. I want the Chargers job. Everyone wanted the Chargers job.
Yeah.
And it didn't come open. And we've talked about it a couple times on the show. You look around the openings in the NFL, and none of them are really that enticing. This, however, was the least enticing because of the situation you're walking into. What's interesting to me at this point, especially with Peyton, and I guess it might have been the same with Harbaugh, I don't know if D'Amico Ryans would have quite had the same juice as a defensive coach coming in there. But if Russell Wilson plays like he did a year ago, Sean Peyton, I assume, has the right, has the respect in that building to be like, okay, well, we're not playing him anymore. That was a luxury that Nathaniel Hackett didn't really have. Not to mention they didn't really, I mean, Brett Rypien is, you know, a number three quarterback in this league. But if this goes down like it went down last year, they're just not going to play Russell Wilson because it was absurd last season. When you think about Payton's offenses, they're so good. This is where it gets really tricky. They're so good at, you know, the Saints offense is so good at creating mismatches in the middle of the field. And, like, what's the one thing, even in his prime, that Russell Wilson wasn't very good at? It was finding those throws in the middle of the field. So it's not a great match. And, I mean, Sean Payton has to be aware of that. And he will do something different. It's not like he, you know, has, like... that's like his one, like, 2013 Saints playbook. He's going to show up with and be like, oh, here it is, guys. This is all I know. but it's going to be interesting what happens on the field, and even more interesting what happens if the on-field product looks like it did in 2022.
I hate putting this on one person. I mean, I don't know what I want if I'm Russell Wilson, right? I finally got my way out of Seattle. Like, I guess if you were Russell Wilson, right, and you could go in a time machine, would you want to go back all the way to the moment you started forcing your way out of Seattle and then think, boy, I got it actually pretty good here. And everybody just thinks I'm sort of this, like, you know, misused talent, and I will go down with the Super Bowl. I can keep chipping away at a Hall of Fame career through my longevity, and I can go out as a god of Seattle, and nobody's ever going to believe the Seahawks when they say that I wasn't running the offense. You know, it's just going to be let Russ cook for the rest of my life. Or, you know, and, you know, credit to him for initiating that separation process. But like, you have a chance to be wholly exposed this year. Like, Hackett was a convenient scapegoat, even though, like, you know, I think probably the reason you kick a 64-yard field goal in the opener is because he's not running the plays that you're asking him to run. And so, you know, but anyway, and there's a lot of open receivers. I mean, man, you and I went back and watched some of those games. There's guys that are just waving their hands in the air, jumping up and down, being like, please throw me the ball, and he's not doing it. And if you do that with a Sean Payton offense, I'll tell you what, Hackett took the criticism for all of that. He took it because that's what he thought was best, I think, for that locker room. And that's what he did in Green Bay a lot of the times. But holy smokes, you think Sean Payton's going to sit there at the podium and be like, yeah, it's all on me. This is why this thing isn't working. The guy's got a Super Bowl ring and is one of the most revered offensive coaches in the NFL. You think he's going to sit there and let his legacy be tarnished? No way. No chance. Like, this thing is going to get exposed in a hurry.
Yeah. There might be a solution. And again, I don't necessarily blame Russell Wilson for wanting to change his style of play at this point in his career and you know, be the pocket operating distributor that he never was in Seattle. But we're seeing why he wasn't that in Seattle. And for, you know, I will not take full credit for predicting that he would be the fourth best quarterback in that division, because at some point last summer, you also asked me, if you were the Eagles, would you trade all your draft capital for Russell Wilson and get the certainty of Russell Wilson instead of Jalen Hurts? And I said, yes, I would, which obviously, I mean, what a nightmare scenario, alternate universe for the Eagles to be in right now. That couldn't have been more wrong. So, he's a guy who, it was his out-of-structure playmaking, which was just spectacular during his prime, and it was also his exceptional efficiency on downfield throws. He was the equivalent of whatever. He was Steph Curry of the end. I mean, these low-percentage moon ball throws that were completed again and again and again, that was him in Seattle, and those are very much linked to physical traits, and the physical traits are starting to diminish, and I just don't know if there's a solution. Maybe Sean Payton has something up his sleeve, or, you know, maybe this is... Sean Payton was the Broncos' third choice, and the Broncos were, like, Sean Payton's, like, 12th choice.
Yeah, I don't know. And it'll... You know what? Right. Let's throw down the voice of reason right now, and let's not finish this on a takey note, right? Because I feel like everything in the NFL has always been, since the beginning of time, right? There's the oh my God, he's going to fix Russell Wilson take, and then there's the this is going to be a disaster take, and it always ends up in the middle. It's like, yeah, they're 10-7, and Russell Wilson threw 22 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, and he's kind of like Daniel Jones now. And so, yeah, you know, and I think that, you know, that's probably what's going to end up happening, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sean Payton had, or somebody through the media had said Sean Payton was assembling his all-star team of freelance coaches here to come with him wherever he might land. One of those names that were thrown out was Vic Fangio, but Vic Fangio will not be returning to Denver as defensive coordinator. He does end up taking the job in Miami, kind of a weird flirtation type thing with what went on there. This is also a really interesting fit because Chris Greer has kind of pivoted to what they want to do defensively by bringing in Bradley Chubb. And I think there's some debate to be had about how good Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb can be as a sort of bookend pass rush tandem. I think Jalen Phillips is good, and I think Bradley Chubb is pretty good. I don't know if they become better than that. But the Dolphins obviously were so blitz heavy. And I mean, the zero blitz stuff they were doing under Josh Boyer over, you know, this past season. And then obviously Boyer was there under Brian Flores. It's going to be a different look. And Vic Fangio, I think, is not quite as blitz averse as his reputation might. I think the Broncos were kind of middle of the pack in blitz rate, but the kinds of blitzes he's going to throw out, you're not going to see a lot of zero blitz stuff out of this Dolphins defense. It's going to rely more on those two edge rushers getting to the quarterback, and it's the first round pick. It's the guy you traded the first round pick for and gave the monster contract. That's where they are putting their resources right now, and it kind of has to work.
It does. I think it will. The Dolphins were third last year in blitz rate at 33.3%, which is interesting because a couple of years ago, 33.3 was middle of the road.
Yeah.
The Ravens were close to 50%. And Ron Rivera told me a couple of years ago that's the goal. You want to finish with 33.3 because what am I missing, right? You want to play man. You want to use your man packages a third of the time. You want to use your zone packages a third of the time. And you want to use your pressure packages, which are a combination of those two things, a third of the time. And that was always his goal, to finish at 33.3. But now Ron Rivera's in the low 20s. The Jets, I think, were the low at 14.9. I want to say the Bengals, the year that they made it to the Super Bowl, were like around 13%, which is crazy low. They rushed the quarterback a little bit more on this one, but pretty much it's like Boyer, it's Vance Joseph, and it's Wink Martindale at this point that are the only guys that are really rushing the quarterback anymore.
Yeah, it's going to be... it's going to be a much different Dolphins defense. And again, look, they had their moments last year, but overall, I think they were probably a relative disappointment, especially the offense obviously took a step forward under Mike McDaniel. The other thing about a Fangio defense is he had really, really rangy linebackers in coverage when he was in Chicago. He didn't quite have that in Denver, but he had really, really rangy safeties, two really good safeties to work with there. But, you know, sort of one of the staples is sort of making those look so blurry and cloudy for the opposing quarterback at the intermediate level. Javon Holland is really good, very versatile. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Their linebackers are more kind of Patriot-style linebackers where, you know, sort of big thumping guy type of thing. I don't know if you'd call any of those guys coverage specialists. Sorry to Andrew Van Ginkle.
But, I know. I was going to say, watch what you're saying about the Dolphins linebackers, Gary.
Apologies. But, you know, that's another spot where... Before they put the money into the edge rushers, they invested in the cornerbacks, which that's a blitz heavy defense. If you want to invest that kind of money in cornerbacks, you can do that. Xavien Howard is still really good. He was banged up last year. I don't know if he quite is going to be the guy he used to be. And who knows what you get from Byron Jones at this point. I mean, the guys who are playing across from Xavien Howard are really third and fourth caliber cornerbacks. And that's part of the reason it didn't work last year. But it's just... it's a shift in resources, a somewhat subtle shift, but it's still, I mean, gosh, you really gotta pay for that stuff up front.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, he's been versatile. He's featured different roles everywhere he's went. You know, but again, did he get the most out of Chubb and Von Miller in Denver? And are you now going to get the most out of Chubb and Jalen Phillips in Miami? I don't know. But it's certainly an improvement there. They paid through the nose to get him. I'm pretty sure he's going to be the highest paid defensive coordinator in the NFL. And boy, did that guy have some options this offseason. So, you know, good for him. We'll see what happens.
DeMeco Ryans takes the job in Houston. And we'll give the caveat. You're never exactly sure whether a great coordinator will translate to a great head coach. There's also some sort of warm and fuzzy feelings with DeMeco Ryans being obviously a I'll call him a Texans great. We're speaking
sure.
in relative terms here. It's a young franchise. But yeah, I'll call him a Texans great here. Those are all really nice, but just on paper. I mean, what he did schematically in San Francisco, and yes, it helps have Nick Bosa, but they were still really good when Nick Bosa missed time or was maybe neutralized in some games. And obviously, he just is a guy who commanded a ton of respect in the locker room. It all adds up to a guy who should work out here for a Houston team that has a chance to really turn the corner this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, again, you want to be weary of saying that there's a slam dunk hire in any cycle, but man, I mean, I think what a victory for the Texans that they were able to lock this in. Because if I'm, and probably if you're D'Amico, right, here's what you're probably thinking, like, I'm not too worried about Caserio at this point, because, you know, I think at this point, he's way more important to the franchise than Caserio. He's a franchise legend. He's got the respect of everybody there. Everybody knows him, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm probably not worried about getting run over by the GM at this point. There's less of a threat on that front. And you get to come in and you get to be the culture creator day one. You get potentially the first pick at quarterback. You're going to have guys that want to come down there and be on that staff. I mean, the last few years, those players just weren't coached well. I mean, you can't draw a top assistant coaching talent. And Pep Hamilton's good. A lot, you know, some of these guys are good, but you know, is he going to be in your first six or seven choices for OC? Probably not. Like, you know, let's just be honest. You know, he did a good job with what he had, but I think that D'Amico is going to have the choices. He's going to have the options. He's going to have the draft capital. He's finally going to have the free agency stuff. This is where it starts to turn around. I mean, the Texans, at least from my understanding, were telling candidates that were interviewing last year and the year before that this was a 3-year deal. This is going to be a 3-year journey in the wilderness. So D'Amico's first year is kind of the year that you're coming out of the woods. You know, if you win 4 or 5 games, that's great. And then I think you're probably ready to take that next step in a just an awful division where you're going to get Jeff Saturday twice a year, baby. So, you know, possible.
We'll see. Oh man, maybe cooler heads prevail in Indianapolis at some point. But this could be kind of a 2-year trajectory that the Jaguars are on, just without the complete meltdown in the first year.
Yeah,
but then they signed all those free agents, and that's why it turned around in 2022.
Correct.
Urban Meyer furiously working on the metric that shows that Christian Kirk was worth 6 wins this year. Kellen Moore out in Dallas, a mild surprise there. He was a guy who is sort of being touted as maybe the heir apparent to Mike McCarthy, who I mean, good for Mike McCarthy. He's making it work there, and we're no longer kind of on constant Mike McCarthy watch at this point. But Kellen Moore out in Dallas, he lands with the Chargers. I really don't had the expertise to really jump on him for any play calling stuff. I do think the offense itself was highly functional and very good. And I think I think the Cowboys are probably okay without him. I don't think they drastically alter the playbook with him gone. And I think this is a huge win here for the Chargers.
I think it's a big win for the Chargers. I think it's a big win for Herbert. I think it's a big win for Eckler. I think it's a big win for those Chargers receivers who just weren't schemed open with Joe Lombardi. And it's an interesting spot for Mike McCarthy to be in. I don't know if I want to be calling plays if I'm him, right? I mean, I think if you're at that point in your career, don't you want to be kind of the CEO, head honcho? I mean, maybe there is a love to calling plays, but we're seeing that breed die out. I mean, every head coach that comes in saying that he wants to call plays by the middle of this first season is not calling plays anymore. And that was true of Nick Sirianni. That was true of Nathaniel Hackett. Gosh, I'm trying to think of who else. Frank Reich called plays in Indy for the majority of his career there, but had such a good relationship with the quarterbacks and was a quarterback. But, you know, and Sean Payton calls the plays, and, you know, so there are, apparently Bill Belichick calls the plays in New England. So there are examples of it. But, you know, I don't know if that's something you want to do, you know?
it's more on his plate. One thing that always stood out to me during his time in Green Bay, and yes, this quote is in part because the Packers were not going to alter their their organizational organization. that's a phrase for you. He would, Pete would ask him, like, boy, don't you want to have a little control over the roster? And he'd be like, I got enough to do. Like, I have enough on my plate at this point. I will handle the coaching. I'll let them handle the, Ted Thompson and everyone else handle the front office and the personnel decisions. So it's a little bit surprising. I really didn't think he'd be a play caller again. I also don't know if I thought he'd last this long. So it's, I don't know. A little bit of good, a little bit of bad.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it'll be fine. I say this while also, I was encouraging some of my wagering friends to maybe explore the under in their win total next year, just a little bit. But I don't know, man. I think that's a good job. You could get a really good offensive coordinator to come there and do all that work for you so you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you run do you run what you ran in Green Bay? You can't, really. And so I don't know. Do you keep the playbook? I don't know. I'm very curious to see what happens there.
My one defense of Mike McCarthy's time in Green Bay is I do think he really fit that playbook to Aaron Rodgers' desires. And I think he took a ton of heat for it and somewhat unfairly. And then obviously we saw something of a pivot when Matt LaFleur got there. And then last year we maybe saw a pivot back to what Aaron Rodgers likes to do, which is no motion before the snap and no play action. And just having everyone line up and him figuring out before the snap, figuring out after the snap, and kind of improvising his own thing. I would imagine that playbook is going to be the same next year for them, or at least that's what I do. If Mike McCarthy hires me as offensive coordinator, that's all I'm going to say. I'm not even going to bother moving down to Dallas. I'm just going to be like, yeah, just keep the same playbook. And if I'm not calling the plays, I'm not going to show up on Sundays.
Hell yeah. I would love to just, I think I've said this on this podcast once when I was I got so mad at work, not at Sports Illustrated once, when I was covering an NFL team that I just left. Like in the middle of the day, mm-hmm. and everyone called me and they were like, hey, when are you going to write your story? And I was like, I'm just not. I'm done. And so I fully support when someone wants to explore that space. It is it's a fun place to be.
The last coaching development we have here is Deuce Staley leaves the Lions. I don't know. We kind of just like the Lions probably more than we should, and this seemed to be kind of a classy move. Number one, Ben Johnson stays in Detroit because he doesn't want to take the head coaching job, and he also wants to be a part of what they're building in Detroit. So Deuce Staley doesn't really have a path forward to any kind of play-calling role. I don't think he'll call plays in Carolina, but he'll obviously have a little more responsibility. But it also sounds like he has an ailing... I think it's his mother down in Carolina, and they kind of let him go to be closer to her, which is a nice move by the Lions and a nice hire by the Panthers. Cool. Yeah,
I think so. I mean, Deuce has been on head coaching watch lists before. I think that there's people out there who believe that he could be kind of another Dan Campbell type head coach, a player with player experience and just, somebody that can manage the entirety of the operation. And so I'd like to see him get his chance under Frank. And I just think that I just have a feeling that's going to be a really well-run tight ship there. And again, you're not going to ascend probably very far in Detroit because everyone's going to assume that any offensive prowess, right, is due to Ben Johnson, who was the hot young coordinator who everybody and their mother wanted to hire this year, mm-hmm. So I think it's good on multiple fronts. You get out from underneath that shadow and you get in with Frank, who's a very collaborative head coach, I think is going to do more for you in your future as a potential offensive minded head coach. So I don't know, I like the whole thing. I think it's all great.
Before we go here, we have minor quarterback news on two fronts here. First is with Aaron Rodgers and a report that the Packers are basically telling him it's time to move on. And normally I'd say a guy like Aaron Rodgers gets to dictate when he leaves. He gets the respect for what he accomplished with the organization and for the organization to say when he gets to leave. But after the last couple of years, I think the Packers have the right to just kind of be like, yeah, I think we're just going to trade you.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we're good. We're all set. And whew, I think this is interesting on a lot of levels, right? I mean, yes, there's the dynamic of would he go with Nathaniel Hackett? The Jets would do this move in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Like, the Jets would plow over the facility and build him a new one if he wanted to, if he asked him for it. I think they'd be through the moon about this. And so there are places that want him, and I think there are places where he'd be good. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to want to. And I think that's what's going to be the thing to watch, right? Is like he has things set up so well in Green Bay. You know, everything almost a little bit like Russ did in Seattle, where, you know, he is the man, right? He's the guy, he's the legend. And, you know, you do risk a lot of emotional equity and capital and leaving that behind. And mm-hmm. I don't know, do you go to the Raiders? Is that the offense you want to play in? I don't know if I necessarily love that. Do you follow Hackett, but then you got to play in New York? And, you know, people make a big deal out of the New York media when they're like the big bad New York media. And I never understood that because, like, I was a member of that and I didn't feel ever big and bad, you know, but, you know, how is that going to play in a town where, you know, you're on Pat McAfee once a week talking about 1984 and how Pfizer's out to get you, you know, and it's a, you know, perfectly free and fine opinion to have as a human being. But, you know, I don't know how that plays in the world's biggest media market where your presence, I mean, my God, I remember the carpet that they rolled out for Tebow, and that thing was just unfathomable in size and scope. Are you ready for that? Where, you know, it's not going to be like Green Bay where you have your little inside jokes with the nine guys that cover the team and you've been together for years and they know how you operate and you know how they operate. This is a whole different animal. And I don't know if you want that to end your career that way. That's kind of, you know, it's tough, you know?
It's that. And obviously, you know, you mentioned Las Vegas and we'll get to why the Raiders are maybe having to come up with some new ideas. I love how I'm teasing the fact that Tom Brady retired as if nobody noticed that in the past 2 days here. Obviously, you reunite with Davante Adams there. Just to be clear, there was no Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams riff when he left Green Bay. Those two seemed to get along just swimmingly. The other problem with hanging in the AFC is you are in a much better conference. Like if you are going to prioritize, I want one more Super Bowl run, you want to stay in the NFC. Although then the question becomes, do the Packers want to trade you somewhere good in the NFC and right. have to deal with that? Obviously San Francisco is the most obvious one. But yeah, I don't know if the Packers are cool with that.
Right. The Packers definitely don't want you to play for the 49ers. And if you're Rodgers, I guess you have some way to complicate that. But yeah, no, you make a good point. I mean,
he'll complicate it.
God, remember when this was going to be like a serene process that he, you know, and everyone was promising that. And now it's like, oh, no, this is going to be, gosh, this is going to be awful. I don't ever root for big things to happen when I'm on vacation, but I am planning a vacation right now, and I'm just like, please, Lord, let me be so far up a mountain with zero cell phone service when Aaron Rodgers decides or doesn't decide or whatever happens. Like, I just, you know, that this is one of these stories that's already so exhausting. And listen, we haven't even made it to the Justin Fields thing yet. Like, and like, there are so many layers of off-season stupidity that we have to get to. But this is the big nougaty center of it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. It's going to be another long Aaron Rodgers offseason. When it just felt, it just felt like it was done last summer and everyone was happy. And we were all going to...
And it's not just Aaron Rodgers. It's not just Tom Brady, right? It's all of us. Like, in some degree, shape, or form, we all just, like, mythologize ourselves. And, like, you know, the whole thing last year about The Last Dance and Phil Jackson. And listen, I love Aaron Rodgers. I think he's a great player. I get a kick out of him as a personality, for the most part, as long as he's not saying anything completely destructive, you know. But, you know, like, you guys weren't the 97 Bulls. Like, this wasn't The Last Dance. Like, these ideas that we have of, like, oh, like, I need to plan my retirement this way and that way. And, like, we just, no one cares. And this is my job to care, and I don't care. Like, let's just get there without all the bells and the whistles. We're all, what is the, you know, we're all just humans looking for someone to walk us home. I forget who said that. But it's true. It's like, why do we have to complicate this with layers of just ego and style and like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this and look like that and blah, just give it up. Like, if you want to go to the Jets, go to the Jets. If you don't, then don't and retire. And, you know, and we'll still say nice things about you. I promise.
Yeah. Now you got to put something up on Instagram.
Don't. I think, like, the last, I mean, this isn't totally true, but, like, I mean, you know, maybe I posted, like, about the births of my kids and been like, hey, we got more people living in our house.
Yeah.
Just in case anyone needs to know. Or, like, wow, like, the ducks in my backyard did something funny today. But, like, I don't know. If I left Sports Illustrated, what am I going to hang a notepad over a power line and take a picture of it? Like, no. It's just, I'm going to go start working at the next place, God willing, that would hire me, you know?
Oh, man. Well, let's get into the guy who is retiring here. Tom Brady, walking away, it seems like for good this time. I don't think we're going to be fooled again on this one. I guess the most interesting development here, besides the fact that I anticipated he was going to play in 2023, and I think you did too, not to put words in your mouth, but it was down to the Bucks or nothing. And that's just kind of surprising because he didn't really want to play for the Bucks last year. So it seemed like nothing was kind of the only choice at that point.
Yeah. I would assume that most people had him dialed in. And who knows? I don't know, right? I think this is one of those situations where do you, like, if you're Tom Brady, right? Here's what I was thinking. You retired on Wednesday with your video that you posted on a Miami beach, but you're going to have to retire again 35 more times before the start of the season, right? At least,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And these aren't going to be public retirements. They're going to be very private retirements because owners and NFL head coaches and GMs don't care that you've reached peace with this. They want to win football games. Frank Reich knew what Andrew Luck was going through, and he sent him Sting in the Police lyrics to beg him to come back in the middle of, like, a personal crisis. And, you know, and there is a draw to that. Kurt Warner, when he was 5 years out of the NFL, and remember that the Cardinals playoff game where they had to start Ryan Lindley?
Yes.
He, like, gathered his family around the dinner table, and he was like, you know, if Bruce Arians calls me tomorrow, I'm going to unretire. And, like, Bruce Arians, you know, it never happened, but there is an indescribable draw to this league and playing in it and being the man and having that purpose every day. And so, I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like, he's retired today, but what's going to happen if the Raiders, I don't know, draft Anthony Richardson and he, you know, I don't want to say any bad injury to even speak it into existence, but let's say he gets hurt or he's not ready and Josh McDaniels calls him on June 18th, the day before the start of mandatory minicamp, and he's like, bro, I'm, you know, can you bail me out here? You know, or what are you doing? I mean, Brady's going to have to retire again, and he's going to have to, you know, he's going to have options. I think even beyond this, he's going to have options.
He was still good last year.
He was.
The one thing, he can't protect himself the way that a lot of these more mobile quarterbacks can, and that was obviously an issue when they had the rash of injuries on the offensive line, but he is still a really good quarterback. He could absolutely be a significant upgrade for a number of teams around the league at this point. So, you know, I think you might have written that, like, if the Titans go through that again, where they are bringing in street free agents to start must-win games in December and January, Mike Vrabel, of course, he's going to call his buddy Tom Brady and be like, why don't you come back for 6 weeks?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, and I'm not comparing it to an addiction. I mean, I used to smoke, and, like, you know, you're like, okay, I'm done. And then you walk over and you see someone smoking and they're like, do you want one? It's like, yeah, absolutely. Give me that. Let's fire it up, you know? And I feel like our brain is just wired that way, you know? And when something gives you such joy and purpose and fame and meaning and fun and thrill and joy and all that kind of stuff, it's like, yeah, I want to do it again. This is awesome, you know? Why wouldn't I want to lead the Titans to a random ass Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's what it's the purpose. I think that's the word that I kind of land on. What's he going to do now? He's not going to scratch that itch in the broadcast booth. Maybe he'll get into, like, Pokemon Go or something, and that'll become the thing he really devotes himself to. But you can't really replicate it. And we will, in the, let's call it, 500-to-1 chance he does unretire and comes back, we will grouse about it, and we will we'll also be privately annoyed that we have to write about it again. But I get it. I get why it's so difficult to walk away. The finality of it is overwhelming. I mean, it's really intense, and he can still play. He's not a crappy football player. We'll see.
Boy, not that it scratches the same itch, Gary, but if you were to set out on your own Pokemon Go journey and try to get Azelf, Mespirit, and Uxie, who are the, I think they're only available in the Asia-Pacific region. And so away, you know, like, they're legendaries, but then they're only in one part of the country. And then, so you kind of have to, you know, or you can try to get all the unknowns.
Yes.
There's 26 of them, right? There's one fashioned after every letter in the alphabet.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. That would take up a lot of time.
Well,
Pikachu,
I think,
Libre, you know?
I think that's why Cliff Kingsbury went out to Thailand. I think he's trying to finish his collection there. But I only collect Psyducks, so I'm fine in my basement.
Have you played Scarlet and Violet, the new ones?
No, I'm overwhelmed by this is my horrible secret that I've never told you. I'm completely overwhelmed by the video game. I don't know how to play it, and I just don't have the heart to dive into it.
Okay.
Sorry.
Whenever you're ready, let me know.
I'm sorry, Connor.
No, that's fine. That's a life choice that you made for yourself. But in the new game, Psyduck is just incredibly available, almost to a frustrating degree, where you're trying to find other things and there's just an insane amount of Psyduck available, and you have to, like, sift through mountains of Psyduck.
Should be the purpose of the game.
Yeah, it's like, so it's a little bit different. It's changed since you left.
The MMQB NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Moy is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
At Emory University, We believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.